Welcome to Hyperlocal, the podcast inspiring economic developers, job creators, and community champions with local solutions and global perspectives. I'm your host, Mason Ainsworth. Thank you for taking the time to join us today, and let's get into it. Joining me today is Claire Barnett, a champion of international economic development. As the Director of Business Growth Services in Toronto, the largest city in Canada, and as a board member on the International Economic Development Council and the Organization of Women in International Trade, she's having the conversations that matter. Claire brings a depth of experience from her roles at Invest Brampton, the Ontario Cabinet Office, the Ontario Ministry of Economic Development, Job Creation and Trade, and Invest Ontario. Her expertise spans the public and private sectors, including international business development, attracting foreign direct investment, communications, place branding, marketing, and leading inclusive economic development initiatives. In this episode today, we discuss the best strategies for dealing with hostile stakeholders, Toronto's Trade TO program, Toronto's AI economic development strategy, empowering women in economic development, and the EDCO board elections, and much, much more. Now let's get into it. Good morning, Claire. Thank you so much for taking the time to join us on Hyperlocal today.
Thank you very much for having me, Mason. It's great to have this conversation with you. I've listened to your podcast. I'm in good company. I see you've had some excellent guests before me.
Oh, that's awesome. I really appreciate that. And that really shows that that it's working. So I'm glad people are actually listening to it. That makes me very happy. And I'm excited that I can bring good quality speakers like yourself and get some of those questions that folks are wondering answered. And hopefully through that process, we can help some folks out in their communities and help support economic development across the province and maybe in time in a bigger area.
That's great. Thank you.
Yeah, no problem. So Claire, for the folks that don't know you and myself, I think we've only met through online forums where you've been presenting and such. And I'm always wondering about folks and kind of where they come from, you know, their origin stories, so to speak. And you've had a wonderful career, to say the least. You know, you worked for the Ontario Ministry of Economic Development. You've represented Ontario in the United Kingdom. You've worked for Invest Ontario, the Cabinet Office, Invest Brampton, and now as Director of Business Growth Services at the City of Toronto, which for folks who are unaware is the largest city in Canada, which is pretty stellar to say the least. I'm curious, what's inspired you to pursue economic development, and how did your journey throughout life lead you to such impactful roles?
Great question. And I think what most people say is that they fell into economic development, or I've heard other people say economic development picked them. And I think I'm definitely in that category. I look back on my career and I see that I had the building blocks through all of my positions to reach where I am today. And I'd love to say that it was an intentional plan, but I think it was really just taking all of my experiences and building on each one. So a really great example is I started my career in the private sector. I worked for a Canadian.com company, helping them expand internationally into the UK and into Europe. So I learned early on in my career what a business was looking for as they expanded internationally or reinvested in a country. And so I learned things like the budget process, the approval process, the site selection, all of those things that are important to an economic developer. At the time, I didn't know that's what it was called, but I worked with agencies in the UK and in Europe to help me do that. And so when we moved back to Canada, when there was a position posted with the Ontario government in economic development for investment attraction, it was just happenstance that I put my resume in, met John Davidson, who many people would know as one of the really longtime serving economic developers in the province. And he hired me, brought me on, and I really built it from there. And I would say that there's a few things that really helped me grow my career. And it was that private sector experience, definitely, to be able to have private sector and public sector experience. The international experience really showed and taught me a lot about understanding global businesses. And read a lot of articles before we took international postings about how they benefited careers, especially for women in business, how they were able to learn so much and expand their network with international postings. And then I think, really, from a personal perspective, I've been really fortunate to have an incredible husband and family. So, from the life alongside an economic developer, as busy as I've been, is not very easy. And my husband's really been there to help our three kids, to allow me to travel on business missions to India and China for 2 weeks at a time, to allow me to take advantage of those opportunities. I think if it weren't for him and then now incredibly supportive older children, I wouldn't be where I am today. So I really give a lot of credit to the family and all of the experiences we've had as a family.
I think that's very powerful. And if my wife's listening right now, Renee, thank you so much for letting me take the time on Thanksgiving Day to record an episode with Claire. We really appreciated it. And no, with all seriousness, I think family and having the right partner in life is so extremely important. And having that support is just incredible. I cannot underscore that enough, and it's really nice to hear that. I've heard that from quite a few folks in the past that the right partner is so key. And when I speak to a couple of my single friends, I say like, "Hey guys, you're not in a rush. Like, take the time, make sure you get the right person, and because it'll make a world of difference in your life."
Yeah, I've been really lucky. I married really young, almost married for 30 years now. And I really give him a lot of credit for the success our family has been able to have.
Wow, almost 30 years. That's incredible. And I know this is not an economic development question, but I'm going to ask it anyways. As you've almost been married for 30 years, to anyone who's listening that's either single or maybe they're newly married or in a relationship thinking about marriage, what would you say the key ingredient there is for a long-lasting relationship? Is there like something specific you would recommend or like a tip that you would give somebody?
I married my best friend, and I don't know that a lot of people can say that or have been blessed, but honestly, Michael is absolutely my best friend through thick and thin. We laugh a lot about things that are happening or things that we should be doing and haven't gotten there. So I think, the humor, finding humor in it all and supporting each other, that goes to the fact that he really is my best friend, and I'm so fortunate to have met him.
I love that. I love that, friendship and laughter. I think laughter is such a good medicine. And my dad always used to say, you need to laugh sometimes to keep from crying.
Exactly.
And that's life, right? So if you, I told this guy in a class the other day, and I looked at him and I said, "Don't take life too seriously, because you're never going to get out alive." And he didn't really know. He didn't really know what to say back to that. But it's that kind of idea is like, hey, like at the end of the day, like, and I know this is morbid, but everybody's going to die at some point in their life. So why not
Yeah.
enjoy the journey, have the laughs, and make a difference where you can?
Yeah, I totally agree with you.
Yeah. So jumping back on track, local impact. I know that you have quite a few awards, and I'm going to ask you about a couple of them today. You have the Amethyst Award for Outstanding Achievement by the Ontario Public Servants, recognized for your Cisco investment team's contributions to Ontario communities. And I was curious if you could tell us a little bit about what that means, first of all, and then maybe if you could point to a specific project that drove local economic growth or improved people's lives, and maybe a comment around why you think that particular project was successful.
Yeah, sure. What that actually means is there was a team of people across divisions within economic development that worked together to attract a new investment from Cisco. And at the time, it was quite forward-looking technology that was being implemented. It was a large investment, so a big impact in terms of the number of jobs coming to the city at the time. And the person who led that was the Assistant Deputy Minister, Tony Lamantia, who people might know from Waterloo Region these days, but he was really quite, he was an inspiring leader. He was a collaborative leader and wanted to make sure that everybody who had participated on that team was engaged. And so that was the community impact, but also the impact within economic development that he led that team. So very grateful for that time with him. Project that comes to mind for me is when I was the director with Invest Brampton, and it's MDA Space. MDA is Canada's space company. They manufacture the Canadarm, and they have been in Brampton for over 50 years. And a lot of people would never know that, but it's a really special company to have in the city for many reasons. The project took probably almost 10 years. And so I was there for the last 5 or 4 years of it. And it was a competitive process. They were building a new global headquarters and a new center of excellence in space robotics. And most cities, communities would love to have an investment like that for so many reasons. Not only it's important, importance to the national economy, but the local economy as well. And so after a lot of hard work, a lot of engagement with the company and the various levels of government, they decided to stay in Brampton and built a new headquarters. And as I mentioned, that Center of Excellence in Space Robotics. And so that was building the new generation of the Canadarm, but also taking control of some space programming. So that meant that a mission to Mars would have been led from Brampton. That was the kind of thing that will be happening. It's 700 new jobs, which is really like space engineers, difficult to come by, but could be recruited in Brampton. And why all of that really matters is because, well, there are several reasons. One is the R&D, the intellectual property, the high productivity, the supply chain development, but also for the city of Brampton, it was about building its new economy. And the team has gone on to do some work in the space cluster. So it has also Canada's headquarters, and they're building some space programming as well. So you can see how it's really spurring that cluster. The new supply chain, the team and I started working on attracting other companies in the sector. And so it really helped diversify Brampton's economy away from logistics, warehousing, e-commerce, into something incredibly impactful for that community. And as I mentioned, from a global and national scale. So I think MDA is a great example for your question.
Wow, holy mackerel. I was not expecting that answer. That is incredible. And I gotta say, and I've looked through your LinkedIn and such, and I think you need to add in there economic developer in space, because that's really what you're helping, lead towards. And I know the companies that are doing the Canada Space Arm and such, they're the ones who are going to be out there in the future, or the younger generations. But it's pretty cool to say, like, hey, you haven't only had an impact in Ontario, but also potentially out in space, and who knows where that's going to lead in the future, which is really exciting.
Never thought of it that way. So thanks for that. I will add it.
Yeah, no problem. As my wife says, I'm a pretty unique guy, but I think that's more of a polite way to say weird, but that's okay. We will continue. So and speaking of I know you mentioned the ministry there a bit, and I know through there you also got another award, which was the Ministry Leadership Award, highlighting your ability to foster transformation and make sure that your team delivers exceptional results. And I'm curious what a key lesson is from your time at the Ministry of Economic Development and Growth, and how that lesson has shaped your approach to teamwork now, being with the City of Toronto and supporting people on your team. For folks who are listening, especially if they have a team underneath them, kind of what are those important things to do and to support and to focus on if you really want to build an exceptional team that's going to do great things, including potentially go to space. So.
I learned a lot at the Ministry of Economic Development from a management and leadership perspective. So I was there for about 17 or 18 years. I started as staff and left as an assistant deputy minister. So I was everything in between, and at each stage, learned new ways of inspiring teams, of developing teams. But as you say, transforming teams, I was often put in certain areas where a mandate change was happening, or new staff needed to be recruited, older staff needed to be inspired more. And each step of the way, what I learned was you needed to treat the team as well as the individuals on that team. Treat them individually. Gone are the days where you're the director and everybody's going to listen to you. I mean, that just doesn't happen anymore the way I think it used to in, 1950s, 60s, 70s of the economic development ministries, or probably any institution now. But you really have to look at the individual and why they're there, what they need from you. And then I think once you've developed those relationships with individual staff people, you can really collectively develop a team. And that's really been my approach. Get to know the people, get to know what inspires them individually, help them with their careers, help them with any individual needs or any learning that they need. The one thing that really sticks out for me of my time there is women, women in public service, women in economic development. I was at the ministry where I was the only woman at the table for many times. And I really learned how women and men approached their scheduling, their calendars, their management style really differently. And that was a key lesson for me. And it really helped transform who I am as a leader as well. And I'm not saying that the ministry was unique in that. Most of the businesses we worked in the auto sector or tech sector, those would be men as well. So it was often that I was the only woman at the table. And I really stopped partway through a year once. I can remember thinking, I have to do this differently. I'm not getting my project socialized. I'm not getting, the deputies sign off on things. What should I be doing differently? And I picked up a book that actually probably changed my career. It's called How Women Rise. And it is very tactical ways that women can change the way they manage their careers by breaking certain habits. And I'll give you a couple of examples. I noticed that the men would stay behind in meetings and I'd be running off to another one. And this was at the ADM level. So I'd be running off to catch my next meeting, whereas they would be staying behind and socializing their projects with each other. Then I noticed they all arrived a little early most of the times through meetings, and they were doing exactly the same thing. They would talk about their achievements and their successes with each other. And I don't think women did that enough at that stage. So it was really a book that changed my way of managing my calendar. I've heard recently from some people within the city how some other men in leadership are managing their calendars exactly the same way. So I've tried not to overschedule myself. My assistant will laugh when she hears this because I'm actually trying not to, but there's not a moment of the day that isn't booked right now. But also another lesson was not to assume people see your work. Not to assume that people notice you and you will get success from that. You really have to promote yourself. You are your greatest champion. And you can't count on others to do that for you. And so those are just some of the lessons I learned working in a large ministry that was male-dominated as a younger woman trying to grow my career in that kind of environment. And so that book really, really shaped how I manage myself, I guess, every day.
Wow, that's incredible, and that's even in that description. I know you're speaking more for women there, but gave me a lot to think about as well, being in the workplace in the future. But definitely going to take a read of that, and that's How Women Rise. I will take a look at that, and I'll see if I can link that in the podcast as well for folks who are interested in checking that out. But I think it's so interesting. You mentioned how a book had such a significant impact on your life. I just finished reading a book, and I'm currently reading another one. One's called Atomic Habits, and the other one is Indistractable.
And I think through that process, I know you joked there about your assistant and saying how your day is like totally scheduled. And now that's something I'm starting to do is that kind of that time blocking, even for things like visiting with family and time with my son and such. It's all in that schedule, which seems at first like very strange to some folks on the
Not at
outside.
all.
But I gotta say, like, so helpful. And also giving that time to be able to focus, whether it's like, hey, like I'm going to go work for this 3 hour block on this particular project, or hey, I'm going to go be in the moment, not check my emails, not look at my phone, not look at social media, and spend time with my son. I think those things are super important, and we need to make sure that we set time aside for kind of whatever that is.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more.
So speaking of giving back a bit, and I'll tie in one of the other things you said in a second here, but I noticed you're currently serving on the International Economic Development Council, and in regards to women, the Organization of Women in International Trade, as a board member. I was wondering if you could tell us a bit about these two organizations, briefly, and then a bit about your time on the respective boards.
Sure. The International Economic Development Council, I've worked closely with them probably for the last 5 years, really closely. When COVID hit, and I wasn't traveling so much, I really had the time to dive into courses, and volunteering with different ACDEV organizations. With IEDC, it was really because of the international component. I wanted to learn global best practices from international leaders in economic development. And so I really jumped in. When I was with Brampton, we became an accredited economic development organization through IEDC. We won several awards. I've taken all of their training courses and have had staff go through it to become certified as well. I was the chair of the International Advisory Council. And as you said, today I serve on the board, as well as I am their champion, and ambassador for them in Canada to help develop relationships with other economic development organizations. And so that's been a phenomenal experience. I've really enjoyed it. Actually, the CEO of IEDC is coming up to Toronto next week for the Toronto Global Forum. And so we've put together some meetings for him to really start building bridges between US economic development leadership as well as Canadian and international. And so that's been really important for me to serve, and I will continue to do so. With the Organization of Women in National Trade, I've been involved with them on the board for the last couple of years as their vice president of communications. For the Ministry of Economic Development, I served as their communications director for about 6 years. So, really have a lot of comms background. And they do a lot of really great events with incredible speakers. And I just actually moderated a panel with someone from the Canadian and Manufacturers and Exporters, the vice president, as well as the director general at Global Affairs Canada, who will be working on the review of the CUSMA NAFTA, is what we used to call it, trade agreement. And I was able to sit down and have that panel conversation with them about what Canadian companies should be looking out for, how can we become involved. And that's just an example of the quality that OIT gets the speakers, and especially timely now with the trade diversification that we are trying to deliver, and really, the narrative on international trade right now, and trying to support women in international trade. So I've brought a few new members along, and certainly intend to keep supporting them as I can.
Well, that is an incredible. I'm going to jump ahead a little bit just based on something you said. I know you mentioned trade quite a few times there, obviously, and I know that Toronto has a new initiative, I believe, called Trade TO. and a program that supports businesses in exporting and diversifying markets through capacity building and trade promotion. I was curious your perspective on how this is helping Toronto businesses navigate the global challenges, like the US tariffs, and as an example, and what impact you're seeing. The world is pretty unique, to say the least, at the moment, and a lot of people are worried about their livelihoods, and it seems like you folks are doing something about that. So I'd like to learn a little bit more and share that info with folks or businesses that are listening out there.
Yeah, sure. Certainly hoping that we are having an impact. And so far, it's been quite the journey to build that type of program within the city when the city hasn't really had that before. What we heard early on from companies in Toronto with the impact of tariffs was that they knew that they should start diversifying trade away from the United States. They knew that they should look at Canada's 15 trade agreements with 51 countries. Where should they get started? They just really actually didn't know the first steps of starting to trade. And so that is the program that we have built to work alongside Global Affairs and the Ontario government. So not never to duplicate what they are doing, but really try and make it more localized for companies within the city of Toronto. And so this actually came from the mayor's economic action plan in response to US tariffs. Early on, the mayor pulled together an advisory table of some of the senior executives in the city of Toronto to really advise on what could the city do to help our economy and our businesses in the context of trade and tariffs and sort of global disruption, global economic disruption. And what came out of that was a need to help companies diversify. And so that was the mandate we were given from that. And as well, we were given a mandate to open up our procurement. And so we worked with Toronto companies early on to help them navigate the procurement process, which I think has been incredibly helpful for businesses as well. TradeTO itself, that program, has three primary areas of focus. One is education and awareness. So doing events on Canada's free trade agreements. We did one last fall on CETA and had our colleagues from Global Affairs. We had a business who has been trading using the CETA trade agreement. We had probably 200 people there to really kickstart our work on CETA. We've launched a webinar series. It's got about eight different webinars in it to help our companies learn how to get started. We are offering sector toolkits for people in specific sectors. And as I mentioned, working with Global Affairs quite closely. The second area is about missions and market access. So, how can the city help our companies access new markets? One of the ways we're doing that are missions, international missions. We were at Hanover with the rest of Canada, it seems, this past March. We were at Vancouver, where we also took companies for Web Summit. We took about 250 Toronto companies to Web Summit as an example. That mission was led by Councillor Shelley Carroll, who's the mayor's champion for economic development. And she was able to get attention to open doors for companies, to have corporate calls, to really be that leader of the mission. And so that was really great to have along and really important to have that political engagement. We have also seen an increase in inbound missions and inbound delegations from all over the world, really interested in Toronto and building those economic and trade connections. And so we've actually created a trade team now. We will be hiring a new trade manager early in the new year to continue this program, to bring that expertise to the team, and then really to build the third part of the TradeTO program, which is about data and collaboration. We need to make sure we're doing this through the ecosystem through the partners in the City of Toronto, as well as nationally, internationally, and that we have the right data that helps companies diversify their markets. So a whole lot of work going on there. It's been incredible to be able to launch something like that and develop that. And so I really hope we can continue to build that program into next year. In the new year, we will be launching our work on CPTPP, which is the Indo-Pacific countries. And so likely taking a mission to that region. And we will be having a launch event of that in December as well. So a whole lot of work on trade TO happening.
Holy mackerel, that is that's phenomenal, Claire. And thank you so much to not only you but to the rest of the team. It's obviously a very timely point, I would say. In when we look back, it'll be in history. And
Yes.
it seems like you're really pulling out all the stops and making sure to help folks as much as you can, and going out, but also receiving those people here. And then Toronto's a phenomenal place, the most diverse city I believe in the world, which is pretty exciting. So it's not surprising to me that with that and with all the other amazing amenities and staff like yourself, that people are coming to invest, and that you're able to support those people as well.
I think the international delegations is one of the really interesting part. They've definitely increased, and we hear from everywhere around the world that has visited that they want to because they need to diversify their markets.
So, Claire, I know it's hard to think that the City of Toronto is doing more, but you folks are doing a lot of incredible stuff. And I know with Hyperlocal here, a big focus for us is AI, artificial intelligence, and what the future of economic development holds. I know that Toronto is a global AI hub, and I'm curious how the City of Toronto is developing its AI economic development strategy. If you believe that's creating opportunities for businesses and communities, and kind of what excites you about that potential moving forward.
Yeah, great question. What excites me is to maintain the momentum and increase Toronto's reputation as an AI center of excellence and a global AI hub. And we did a lot of consultations over the last several months with businesses in the space, as well as our partners, so the Toronto Regional Board of Trade, Toronto Global, University of Toronto, Vector Institute, to really make sure that we were maintaining our leadership. But the question was, what could the city do, the city's economic development department do to maintain that and grow that international recognition and international value? And so we landed in a three areas that we are starting to develop action items under each one. One is talent. Maintaining, retaining the talent that we have coming out of places like the University of Toronto, but also recruiting international talent. And so, what we heard from companies like Cohere was that their R&D hub in Toronto was mostly the talent came from international locations that were excited to be in Toronto and wanted to contribute to Toronto and Toronto's economy. And so we really want to make sure that we focused on that talent piece. The second was on our SMEs, that there's a low adoption rate in Canada generally, but in Toronto for SMEs adopting AI into their manufacturing or their business processes. And we wanted to be able to support them to help them ad adopt AI into their businesses. And so we've partnered with the Toronto Regional Board of Trade, the World Trade Center, to do some training, to do some programming specific to that. And that's just one small example about how we'll start helping our SMEs. And then the third area is really around marketing, that Toronto needs to market itself globally as that center of excellence for AI, whether it's AI talent or AI businesses. And it's not like the City of Toronto can take on a multi-million dollar international marketing campaign, but we can have the same impact with our partners. And so we are looking at the value proposition, the key messaging, maybe even a visual identifier in terms of creative to be able to market internationally. And that can be our companies taking the message abroad, as well as different levels of government, but certainly the city government. We participate in a lot of AI-focused conferences. And I will say, tying into my work with IEDC, learning from them about AI in economic development has been really helpful. They have a chief innovation officer who I've been talking to about this work. And so there is an element of helping my team understand utilizing AI in our work. And so that's something I look forward to progressing a bit more with in the new year.
That's incredible. And I think our previous answer about what's going on with tariffs and trade and such, I think that really shows that this is the time to come together as a region and as a country as well, with the private and the public sector, to say like, hey, how can we work together to make sure that we are all stronger? And I think this is a prime example of that, of seeing that need there and what you need to do, and having folks go out there and share resources and to make that happen.
It's exciting, I agree.
And I know you've provided a lot of really interesting answers today, and I know myself, I've learned a ton from you. And I was curious if you had any advice for new economic developers, specifically, somebody who's looking to get into an economic development role, whether they're looking at entering a municipality or an outside agency, or maybe the province or something like that. What are those key steps that you would recommend for somebody to partake in or to do? Or to learn about, to get them ready or get them into those positions in the future.
Yeah, that's a super question because, as I said at the beginning, many of us just fall into economic development. But to be exceptionally intentional about it, there's a few ways I think that people could start looking into it. And one is joining the community, whether it's international organizations like IEDC or Ontario with EDCO or EDAC. It's really becoming part of that community. I can remember taking a few people 1 year to the IEDC conference, and they said that they found their people. They felt really good and comfortable being around people who knew exactly what they were talking about and could offer advice. And so I think joining that community early on is really important to help develop that network. I would also suggest people build their own unique brand. What makes them stand apart? What sets them apart from others? Developing your own personal brand is something I think we hear a lot about in, business journals and business school. And I do think it's really important. And I provide that advice to my own sons, as they develop their own career. Finding a champion, to help. And that's very different than a mentor. A mentor really helps you great with advice, with context, with learning from their experiences. A champion will really help you move up, move over, move into roles, really become way more active, I think. And finding that champion is a hard thing to do, but you'll find it within your community. And I think that that's really important. And what I say to my team constantly, no matter what team I have been leading, is to recognize in economic development what you're signing up for. And it might not be the right place for you. It might be the perfect place for you. And there are things you need to really be aware of early on so you can develop your own characteristics, your own strengths and skills. One of them is the political aspect of economic development. And, even in my early days of being with the Ontario government, I can remember I led a site selection portfolio and I'm in the room briefing ministers. I'm at events with the ministers. People really trust you to be that sort of ec dev expert, even at the beginning stages of your career. But it is a very political environment, and some people don't want to be in that environment. So I think you really need to recognize that and how you can build your own political acuity, because that becomes invaluable to someone like me who needs that support at the political level. And economic development's crazy, right? Like one day I'm working on an AI strategy. The next day it's trade TO. The next day it's going to meet a manufacturer in Scarborough who needs our help hiring local talent. And the next day it's a planning issue to support a company. So it's really varied. And you can be on all of that stuff. You really just have to be okay with that sort of fast-paced environment. So I think is the things you can do to build your career, but also recognize what your career will be like if you're an ec dev. And I've loved it. I mean, it suits me well, really well. Like I've really enjoyed all of the files and all of the different areas of ec dev over the years.
I love that. I think that's so interesting, and I'm just thinking out loud of it. If you want to change the world, you got to be a little bit crazy.
I'm a little bit crazy.
and that's okay. And I think that that keeps things exciting. And you've provided some great content there. And I think joining the community for sure. Like you need to be part of a community, and that's whether it's economic development or something else. Meet those people of like mind so that you can share some of that. And building your brand and in any scenario, I think is extremely important. I like the find your champion. That's one I haven't heard before from folks. I'm curious of because I know there's lots of mentorship programs out there. How would you say is a good way to approach, or is it just something that just happens organically, of finding, somebody that who's going to be a champion for you?
I think it's a bit of both. I often think things happen for a reason and things happen around you. You just need to take the opportunity and grab it. And I didn't know that early on in my career. I've never been part of a formal program for mentorship, but I've learned from a lot of people that I've worked around, and I didn't have that champion. And that's something that I advise people who come to me for career advice, or as I said, even for my own kids, you need that champion to make it easier, right? I've worked really hard over the years to be where I am today, to build my career, to build my brand. I've probably would have been a lot easier if I had that champion early on. And I think that comes from, find the person that you respect in the space in economic development, find the person who has done things that you would love to do and get to know them and then ask them, is this something, would you be willing to help me out? Would you be willing to put me in meetings? Where I can be at the table or observe, like you're not going to be the one at the table presenting something new to the premier on your day one because you have a champion. You're going to watch the person who does it and learn from them, and then they're going to bring you to the table. And I think that that's where you just should get started.
I think that's great advice. Thank you so much for expanding a bit on that. I'm a big believer as well. I think everything happens for a reason. And it's funny, you mentioned a word earlier in the podcast that really resonates with me. And one of our other folks, Brock, who was on the podcast, mentioned this as well. And he said, happenstance. And sometimes these things just happen. But if you're not looking for them and you're not aware when they happen, you can miss a lot of opportunities. So I think that's super important, is what you said. Observe what's going on around you and make a point to look for those opportunities. And then also, don't be afraid to ask somebody and have that conversation and say, hey, this is something I'm passionate about and I want to learn more. Is there an opportunity there? And because if you don't ask, no one's ever going to say yes. And to quote a sports analogy, you miss 100% of the shots you don't take, so you might as well take them along this journey.
I totally agree.
Yeah, and Claire, you've provided a lot of great content today, and you've taught me a lot. I know there's an exciting time that's going on right now, which is an opportunity to contribute more, which is the Economic Development Council of Ontario. And I see that they're having an election right now for their board of directors, and you are running in that election, which I believe is this coming Wednesday, which is the 15th voting opens. I was wondering if there was anybody who's listening to this that you wanted to chat to and let them know, maybe give them your pitch and let them know why they should vote for you. I think there's a lot of reasons in this podcast to be quite blunt. But maybe it's best that they hear it from you.
Thank you, and thanks for that opportunity, Mason. I appreciate it. You've heard a lot on this podcast about my experiences, my 20-plus years, the things I've done, all areas of economic development, from small businesses and BIAs and Main Streets, all the way up to attracting foreign investment and everything in between. And really would love to bring that experience to the board table. What has made me passionate over the years in ECDEV, you've also heard, really focused on growing women's careers in economic development, especially seeing how I can help. The thing we haven't spoken about is I am bilingual in English and French and spent some time working in Europe. And I think that's important to acknowledge the diversity of our province in both French and English, especially for members of EDCO who may want to experience content in French and that type of thing. Just some, unique ideas or first thinking around that. But really, I think I've reached a point in my career where I would like to give back. I would like to be involved in the community. And also, the city of Toronto needs to be a stronger part of the ecosystem in Ontario. We really need to be part of what's happening across the province to support our colleagues and also learn from our colleagues in Ontario. I think Toronto has really been focused inward. And now being, a year with the city, I'd really like to try and grow its network through this kind of role at EDCO. So I think I bring a lot of experience, a lot of interest, a lot of energy, and a commitment to become a good partner with EDCO.
Amazing. It seems very clear to me that you're committed and committed to making a difference and giving back. So I wish you all the best, and I'm sure that's going to go well for you. Bringing kind of to the end of our conversation today, I always like to have a mystery question, and that can kind of take different forms. This one today comes from one of our past guests, actually. And the question is, what are some of the best bet strategies for building consensus around divided or unaligned stakeholders when trying to get a green light on economic development projects or proposals?
Woo, good question, and tough to do. So certainly I could give all the advice in the world, but actually doing it is really, really hard. So I would acknowledge that right out of the gate. As I mentioned with staff in terms of being individuals, it's the same in these kind of situations. These are individuals around the table with maybe competing interests, perhaps diverse or conflicting goals. And so getting to know each person involved in this and what their interests are would be the first step that I would take in terms of a strategy. And then you can find common ground. But you're not going to find common ground if people are unaware of what the other person's interests are, and you won't be aligned at all. And I also really do try and bring humor to the table, and experience to the table. And so a lot of the times it's just getting to know each of the players off of that sort of serious negotiation table or sort of serious boardroom conversations to just get to know people one-on-one and really find out what they're looking for, but also them as human beings. And I think we really lose sight of that because we're all so busy, we forget that we're actually just humans. And I might be at the table worried about a sick child at home, for example, and not focusing on this and not giving it my attention. So I think we lose touch of that human component of these types of situations. And so that would be probably the first building block that I would suggest people look at when trying to find consensus. And then you earn the right to come to the table with some recommendations because people know you and know you are there to help reach consensus that will be beneficial to each of them. And I would suggest throwing recommendations forward. I think it's always harder for people to come up with recommendations themselves, but really easy for people to respond. And that's a tactic that I have certainly used over the years as well. It might not come out of the room with any of the recommendations that you brought forward, and that's okay because you're bringing them forward for people to respond to. And that's been really successful for me as well. I could probably talk about this on and on and on for hours, but I'm going to leave it at that, Mason.
I love that, and it seems you've had a lot of experience in this area from your answer, and I think a couple of things you mentioned just to tie them together a bit. I know earlier you mentioned the importance of political acuity and understanding the politics involved, and I know as somebody who has a background in politics from my time as a city councilor, that is so important, the ability to be able to read people. And especially as you mentioned, like they might be dealing with something at home, and being able to pick up on some of that stuff and say like, hey, maybe this isn't the best time to just read a list off to somebody, but to break the ice a little bit and have more of a human conversation. And I like how you put that. And I think of one example. I won't get into the specifics, but I had a really hostile stakeholder that I had to meet with through work one time. And went in, knew it was going to be hostile, and decided just to be a bit more vulnerable with them and talk about something directly related to their industry that happened to me recently, which was like super awkward, but also kind of funny. And I got to tell you, after having that conversation, it was like daylight and dark. The whole room changed. And it was, hey, how can we work together and how can we move this thing forward? As opposed to what I had been told, which was like, hey, they're going to fight you tooth and nail. Like, this is going to be really awful. And it's just that human aspect. Because at the end of the day, all of us are humans and we need to, I think, start treating each other more like that.
I think we've lost sight of that a lot. Because we're so in such a fast-paced environment, and the world is a little hostile right now, but to be able to disarm people is a skill that should be developed early on as much as possible as you can. It just came to me quite naturally to be able to be disarming, and people are really quite surprised and take a step back to say, "Oh, she's just talking to me. She doesn't want anything from me right now." And I think that that's probably the same experience you had.
Yeah, absolutely. So, for those folks who are still listening, be a good human. And Claire, I just wanted to thank you so much for the insight today. I know I have learned a lot, and I'm looking forward to some folks learning from you as well. And wishing you all the best on your adventure.
Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
Hey, you. Yes, you. Thank you so much for taking the time to listen to today's episode. When I'm out and about, whether I'm, biking or walking or driving, I love listening to podcasts. So it really is special to me that you took the time to tune into Hyperlocal today and listen to our podcast. I want to make sure we're able to give you the best content possible in the future, get the speakers you want, talk about the topics you want, and really make a difference in your community. We want to focus on those little things. And a big thing to help us do that would be if you could take this opportunity to make sure that you're following the channel. If you want, feel free to turn on the notifications and we can make sure you get notified on the next episode. And I just wanted to say thank you so much for caring about economic development and caring about your community. And keep up the good work. You're not alone out there.